Hello. Thank you so much for listening to WGN Radio. And I know some of you are still on your way home from the Blackhawks game. A tough loss. And, you know, you got to keep showing up, everybody. Keep supporting our team. Just like yesterday's team. Man, oh, so dear. Many angry people, Matt. Yes. So many angry people. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And we hope that you are happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are tonight. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show. And joining me in studio from RogerEbert.com and Indie Outlook is Matt Fagerholm. Thank you so much for coming in, Matt.
Such a pleasure. My gosh.
This is exciting.
We're all losing sleep because of all the lost games and the snubs at the Golden Globes. It's like it's a perfect time to just be up and talking.
Did people feel snubbed last night or that there were snubs?
There were snubs. There were definitely snubs. And it wasn't just the stuff that wasn't nominated. It was the stuff that didn't win. So that's been the dialogue right now quite a bit.
I don't listen to the dialogue. I was just so happy that Nick D actually made a great point about Glenn Close and Jeff Bridges with their big wins.
Glenn Close, a living legend, incredible, and best speech of the night as well.
It was. She looked genuinely touched and surprised.
Because she was not considered the front runner. Everyone thought it was going to be Lady Gaga for Star is Born, and then Glenn Close comes in, and her whole movie's about a woman who's ghostwriting for her husband, who's not getting credit for her great work. And so she's talking about the importance of personal fulfillment for women. It was a beautiful speech.
Right.
It really was.
She mentioned her mom, who had in her 80s realized she hadn't pursued her dreams.
Yes.
And, you know, it's one of those things where you have to keep telling yourself it's not too late. Wherever you are, take that moment, because that it's sad to hear that her mother didn't feel like she had a fulfilling life.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And to think that
she raised Glenn Close, which is a huge achievement.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes.
Right?
But still, you have to find space for yourself that isn't connected to whatever your parental duties are, and it's hard to find that space and carve that out. And I just thought that was a beautiful message, so connected to her movie. And she's never won an Oscar. She's never won an Oscar. So this might be that springboard to getting her finally a win, I think.
Do you know how long in our house it took for us to remember the name of that movie? I could not, because it was weird, because she walked by Michael Douglas, and they had a little bit of an exchange.
Yes.
And I was like,
you'd see the bunny boiling in the pot.
I could see everything, and I said Basic Instinct instead
of course, because that's another Michael Douglas, you know, movie. Yeah.
Yes.
Torrid romance,
And I thought, it took me a while, and I was not going to look it up. I'm sure you had that moment, unless you have perfect recall, because I get the
Fatal Attraction. It's pretty good for me.
It pops right out at you?
Yes.
It took me a moment, but I finally got it.
It's good for me because she now kind of regrets making the movie. As great as it was for her career, she thought it kind of stigmatized people with mental illness, and so she's actually done a lot of great work since then.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, all the organizations she's championed, incredible.
Because all I kept saying was like, I'm not going to be ignored. And I was trying to remember.
It's a great fantasy. I consider it just like a fantasy horror movie.
A thriller, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So that was for The Wife, which I don't think many people know much about, as you were just giving a great description of it. And is this a good movie?
It's a wonderful film. It's overlooked. I mean, there's just so many films that get lost in the shuffle with all the studios, you know, throwing stuff at you. But I'm really glad this one's breaking through. Her husband's played by Jonathan Pryce. A great performance from him as the husband. And I got a very limited release, but I'm hoping it'll start getting through to people with the screeners, people who are voting, and then eventually get some sort of release around Oscar time would be fantastic.
And you mentioned, I just watched last night afterwards. I'm like, okay, I got to take a look and see some of these other films. So I watched A Star Is Born.
Yes.
Which was good. I get why people enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I was trying to figure out what Bradley Cooper was doing with his voice.
And
then it gets explained like halfway through.
Yes.
I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, Sam Elliott's his much older brother. Okay. I get that extremely low baritone voice.
Well, they did a good job of explaining that. Our dad was 63. They really went out of their way to explain it.
Because otherwise you'd be like, come on, what's going on?
Seriously. There were some moments that I enjoyed. I get why people loved it. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on A Star Is Born?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I respect that they wanted to do an original musical. It is a musical. I know they didn't want in the musical category because it's with the comedies, but it is a musical at heart. I thought the songs were wonderful. I thought Lady Gaga was fantastic for what she was trying to do. It was trying to break through and be an actress and do something that felt very personal. She's not putting on the Lady Gaga show. She wants to do something that's intimate. And I don't know. I thought she and Cooper worked off off each other really well. Nothing's ever going to top the Judy Garland Star Is Born from 1954, though. That's the thing. Nothing's ever going to come close. But I'd say this is it's like a second or third on the tier of the many Star Is Borns out there.
It was interesting when they were talking about her nose. I thought how interesting that when Barbara Streisand played the same role, I thought, what an interesting sort of...
And now Lady Gaga's going to do Funny Girl on Broadway. So, she's walking in the Streisand footsteps. And I think she's going to win the exact same Oscar that Streisand won for her Star Is Born, which is Best Song. She's going to win Best Song for Shallow.
Oh, no
easily.
Doubt.
I think that's the one thing it's got sewn up. So
I thought that there were really some interesting elements to it. I actually thought they did a good job with addiction in the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
You really feel all of that.
Yes.
I want to, before we get too far into just one movie, because so far we've talked about The Wife and The Star Is Born. How did you do? Because I'm guessing a lot of people like you had their cheat sheets out.
It's fun to do. I don't bet money because I know I'm going to lose, especially for the Globes.
So your predictions, what was your percentage wise?
It was about like a 40% success rate, I'd say.
That's not terrible.
It's not terrible.
Okay.
It's not terrible, but I mean, everyone got the best pictures wrong.
Well,
most of the people I know got the best picture predictions wrong, because everyone said, obviously Star Is Born is going to win for a drama. Mm-hmm. It was up in the drama category, and it was up against amazing films, Black Panther, Black Klansman, If Beale Street Could Talk. But then the worst film of the five wins, which is Bohemian Rhapsody, which I'll admit, when I saw it, I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. Not knowing anything about Freddie Mercury is the important thing. The more you know about him,
that's what I've heard,
the more holes you can poke through that film. And the more I learned about Mercury doing the research, I was like, yeah, I mean, this film's just kind of more like a commercial for Queen, which it's a loving kind of celebration of the music, but it's not a really good film in terms of the actual facts of who these people were. It's a very generic, run-of-the-mill script.
So are people reacting to how well acted it is, or the writing?
Well acted. I mean Rami Malek, absolutely, who won the award last night for playing Freddie Mercury. I mean, he really holds the whole film together. But then there was all the controversy. Well, why didn't they mention the director? The director was nowhere. It was producer Graham King accepting the award last night. Well, that's because the director, Bryan Singer, has all of these lawsuits pending right now. A lot of charges of sexual abuse being launched at him throughout the years that these things get tabled. And I don't know exactly where they are. But and then he was also thrown off the set. He got into all these altercations, or he was away from the set for a long time. So they had to replace him with someone else. So there was all this behind the scenes drama, but this Graham King, the producer, who was the guy going up accepting for best drama, he's very much in with the HFPA. They really like him. He's kind of like their, I hate to say it, but Harvey Weinstein. Like, he had the mind of knowing how to move things and how to influence people. Scorsese didn't start winning at the Globes until Graham King started working with him. So I think that was very much what pushed it over into winning.
Okay.
Last night.
And how much, I mean, do you think that all of that going on behind the scenes with Singer is going to have then a negative effect when it comes to the Academy Awards?
I don't know. I mean, because I thought it would up to the Globes, but it didn't seem to have any effect on them there. And I know, and that's what they're trying to keep the dialogue of. This is about celebrating Freddie Mercury. It's not about Bryan Singer. I mean, that's why they didn't even mention him. They never even mentioned him in the thank yous, Rami Malek or Graham King. So, it's interesting. They really want to keep the dialogue just on Freddie Mercury. But there were some people on Twitter last night. One lady said, this is the first post-Me Too award.
Oh, okay.
Giving it to some, a film directed by someone who has these allegations against it.
Right. So. Well, because it's happening quite a bit.
Yeah.
All right. So what other movies? It was Bohemian Rhapsody, Black Klansman, If Beale Street Could Talk. Those were the...
I really loved all the other films in the category. I liked Bohemian Rhapsody. I really loved Black Panther. I thought it was the best Marvel film until I saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I think that's probably now the best Marvel film ever made.
Which
Black Klansman... Yeah. Did you see it?
I haven't seen Spider-Verse.
Oh, okay.
I've seen Black Panther a couple times.
Yes, it was wonderful.
Yeah, but did you think that was going to win in this category?
I didn't think it was going to win because it was up for nothing else,
right,
which was such a snub. Like, Michael B. Jordan should be, I think he should be the front runner for Best Supporting Actor this year, personally. But, it wasn't up for anything else except, like, Best Songs. So.
It was weird that the actors from Black Panther gave the award for Spider-Verse.
Yes, you could just guess what was going to win. He said, the Marvel people, okay.
It was sort of interesting, but it was also startling to me that it would hear the stars of Black Panther and this entire white crew for Spider-Verse. It was sort of a really really interesting contrast.
Sure.
But I mean, that's what I mean. We're making, you know, people are growing and trying to go in that direction too.
Exactly.
Of being more diverse.
Exactly. Well, and I like what they say about everyone wearing the mask. There's all these charges against Marvel. It's like, well, it's about looking at the elite powers to save all of us lowly people. And Spider-Verse saying, no, anyone can be a hero. You can be your inner hero. I want them to follow that mentality a little bit more for sure.
We are hanging out with Matt Fagerholm, who from IndieOutlook.com?
Yes, Indie-Outlook.com and RogerEbert.com, assistant editor.
Excellent.
At that wonderful site. It's a dream job.
I can imagine.
Yes.
How fun. 312-981-7200. If you want to join our conversation, you can call or text us to that number, 312-981-7200. More in a moment on 720 WGN. The Golden Globes last night. That was the fun news. I mean, as much as, it was kind of a nice way to end my night after the Bears loss. And I'm so grateful to have Matt Fagerholm from I always make fun of people for doing that.
We can still do that. It's no problem.
We can, but it gets a little
bit long.
You don't
have to put it in, though. It's not mandatory. Yeah.
I feel like I should be a PSA for everybody. RogerEbert.com
yes.
And Indie-Outlook.com.
Yes, you got it.
And we are talking about the winners and the snubs.
Yes.
Are snubs considered the people who were the front runners? So I guess people are saying Lady Gaga was snubbed.
Yeah, I suppose.
Right.
But even Lady Gaga, I think she just strikes me as a gracious person. She does. I mean, like when she was congratulating Glenn Close, it didn't seem false to me. And she knows, like, Glenn Close, living legend. Like, can you really be disappointed by that? It's like losing to Glenn Close is kind of a compliment in itself. Exactly.
Yes. Do you know who I thought stole that movie? And it's funny because Paul Farver came in studio. We're going to talk. He can join us anytime he wants, too. We were talking about the film I, Tonya from last year.
Yes.
And how Paul Walter Hauser stole every scene he was in.
He absolutely did.
And
yes.
I thought from this movie, from A Star is Born, I thought that Andrew Dice Clay was outstanding.
He is Lady Gaga's father in
yes
the film.
I gotta see it now.
I couldn't believe
I didn't realize it was him until the credits at the end.
He was so sweet. Well, my dad was a chauffeur. So when they roll up, right, after they've been out all night, Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, when they roll up, I knew immediately that her dad was a chauffeur.
Right?
Because it was all these black SUVs in front of her house.
Totally.
And she said, my dad's a driver.
Yeah.
And my dad used to hang out at the Dunkin' Donuts at Milwaukee and Nagel with all the other drivers, cabbies and chauffeurs, and also at the Pine Grove in near the airport. And it was just like that. They would all have their white shirts and their ties. And I got really, my father passed away in 2001. And, you know, I was a daughter of a guy who wanted me to be a star. So it was so much fun to watch her dad. I thought that was so genuinely and sweetly done.
Yes. And always telling the same stories about Sinatra and everyone can just kind of recite them together, you know. And he really captured that guy so well.
Really,
he really did.
Just
the warmth and the love he has, how he believes in his daughter, but you know.
And then feels like he did something, like it was his fault when things fall apart.
Yes.
What were you gonna say, Paul? This is,
no,
it was great.
I was going to say that you're like the Lady Gaga of
in my
Chicago.
House.
Yeah, it's like Lady Patty.
Absolutely.
Well, my dad would do that. My dad would try. He would tell people, you know, she got being funny from me, and tell like he always had like he'd have like props for jokes and stuff, and always, you know.
I gave her that tag.
Right. Well, when I was first on WGN Radio, it was while he was sick before he passed away.
Yeah.
He heard me my very first time on WGN, and he goes, "You know what? You're going to be okay, kid." And like this to him was like that night with Bradley Cooper. Like this.
It's
exciting to him.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I did enjoy A Star is Born. What are some of the other front rows? So Black Panther, Black Klansman, Beale Street. These are obviously going to be considered for the Academy Awards. Are there 10?
I think so. Yeah, well, they're kind of malleable each year.
Really?
It's like how many more films they can push in there for ratings, I think is mainly what motivates the 10 or 8 or however many they choose.
Yes, Paul?
The movie that I thought was the greatest movie of the year was snubbed, and I don't know enough about the Academy. I've only recently become a SAG member, so I haven't read my directions.
Sure.
Well, now you're talking about a different award ceremony because
this is the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
I know this is Golden Globe, but I know that they got snubbed last night, and I know that SAG is coming on. But Won't You Be My Neighbor by
documentary
about Fred Rogers wasn't
it's a wonderful film. I mean that they don't even have a category for documentaries. That's the thing, like they don't even mainly are about big names. That's
but the Oscars do.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Absolutely.
Short documentary, full length documentary, and it's what's interesting is I guess there would never be a time when they would make a documentary a nominee for Best Picture.
That's what my next question was.
Absolutely.
So could that have, because the Golden Globes, since there wasn't a category, why wasn't it nominated for the best movie?
It's interesting. I don't know if that's ever happened before, but I don't see why it couldn't.
Right?
If there is all of that, you know, critical push behind it. I think it was the highest grossing documentary last year, or it was one of the biggest films, independent releases. I mean, Fred Rogers. Truly, I mean, growing up with him, I mean, they captured
man alive.
Yeah, they captured what made him. So,
I don't know why you're laughing, Patty.
No, I'm laughing how sweet you are about this film. He's been begging me to watch it. Like,
it's the greatest movie of all. I don't understand. Like, I mean, I haven't written to the foreign press yet, but I will. Because I didn't even know they didn't have the category. Because I was waiting to, honestly, that's the only reason I watched parts of the Golden Globe last night was to see what happened with that movie.
Yes.
And then after a while, I was like, let me just Google if it's even in there. And it wasn't. Yeah. I was like, this is all fake news. And I just turned it off.
I think it's absolutely going to get a I think if there's any sure thing at the Oscars, that will get a nomination.
That makes me feel better.
And the director, Morgan Neville, actually, my cousin Jeremy Scahill lost to him at the Oscars a few years ago when Morgan won for 20 Feet from Stardom. That was his last big documentary. But I think this one's even better. I think
it's
captures the essence of Fred Rogers beautifully.
And it's just the best movie of all time. I don't know if anyone disagrees, if people want to text and talk.
It was one of the best documentaries. The other documentary, though, that has to be nominated is our homeboy, Bing Liu from Chicago, Kartemquin Films. He made this film called Minding the Gap, set in Rockford, about him and these skateboarding kids.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Ooh.
Incredible film. It's one of the best reviewed documentaries of the year. So that'd be really exciting if it got that and the Fred Rogers movie together. Those are two of the best films of the year in one category.
I have to ask this.
Yeah.
What documentary did your cousin do?
Dirty Wars.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. And that was 2013, I think, and stuff. But yeah, that was a surreal experience when you're an investigative journalist being nominated and going to the Oscars. It feels very weird.
I would imagine.
To be in that room.
Yes. I would imagine. Well, we've talked about the Best Picture drama. So then, because there's only five in the category for the Golden Globes, there will be 10 Best Picture, possibly, at least the availability of
it. Yeah, 10 at most, probably, yeah.
So the musical and comedy category, which is what the Golden Globes does, they sort of, I didn't realize that Green Book was considered, as A Star Is Born, considered a musical.
Well, even considered a comedy. Like, I know there's funny stuff in it, but I wouldn't consider it a straightforward comedy in any sense. You know, it's dealing with very heavy issues of...
Which category? Was Vice also in the comedy?
Vice was also in the comedy, yeah. Which, are there, I mean, I guess, dashes of irreverence, but it's not a full-on comedy either.
I wouldn't think so. Just
it's like when The Martian won comedy, you know? It's
right.
Their definition of that is very...
Kind of snubbed, that movie. Vice got... I mean, other than Christian Bale, it seemed like I didn't see a lot that they got.
Tom, what did you think about Vice? And that's why.
It's good...
Right.
It's interesting. It tries different things. It takes a lot more liberties with the form than Bohemian Rhapsody did, for sure. Bohemian Rhapsody is just straight up, just very commercialized.
Yeah,
as generic as it gets. At least Vice does some weird stuff. But ultimately, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, we knew that Dick Cheney was a bad guy. It doesn't have a lot of weight. It doesn't do anything particularly revelatory, but it's a good watch if you want to refresh
around
the Bush era.
It's like a fun performance exercise. I think what you were saying before.
How long a movie is that?
I don't know. I'm like, it's like 2 hours.
It's like 2 hours. Yeah.
2:15. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Why is the trend now that movies are getting longer and people's short attention spans are getting...
Let's talk about that when we come back, because I've got to take a break and go to news in just a moment. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We're in studio with comedian Paul Farvar, Esquire, and the assistant editor for RogerEbert.com. And
one of three assistant editors.
I'm not trying to snub the other people.
No, it's
not a snubbing situation. And you can also visit indie-outlook.com for great work that Matt Fagerholm does on 720 WGN. I said that already. I'm going to say it again. It's just fun. I'm falling. I believe the running time on A Star Is Born is about 2 hours and 15 minutes. You're listening to the Patty V Show. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining me is Matt Fagerholm. He's the assistant editor, along with two other people that he'll quickly point out to you at RogerEbert.com. You can also visit indie-outlook.com. And the voice of disapproval about long movies is comedian Paul Farvar, Esquire. But I think this is 2 hours and 15 minutes.
It's around there, yeah. I'd say so. That sounds about right, yeah.
So I think that sounds about right. If you're going to... hand over, you know, anywhere from $10 to $15 for a movie.
Yeah.
Some people
And I'm glad that they gave them the running time to really make the songs resonate, too.
Because sure.
There's a lot of good songs in there, and you might as well let them play out a bit.
It's Lady Gaga.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta let that all go. Yeah. But yes, Paul.
I didn't see the movie. Don't say yes, Paul, like that.
Yes, Paul. Your disapproval.
Here's my two cents on. I don't see a lot of movies in theaters, but I like movies when they used to be, you know, 94 yeah. minutes, 96 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever. And now they're longer. And the thing that I'm kind of surprised at is people have a lower threshold of pain for long things now, mm-hmm. like in terms of like length of time. Facebook, like all the social
binge
media.
Watching. Binge watching.
Are you saying that people are just trying to get through a movie so they can update their Facebook status?
Yeah. Like, how do you
just say, like, I watch all these seasons today? It's a bragging thing.
Right. 2 hours without checking your phone? That's kind
of
hard.
May I ask a question of Matt?
Yeah.
What was roughly the running time of Ben-Hur?
Ben-Hur is actually one of the fastest moving, like, 3.5 hour movies I've seen. And then you watch The Ten Commandments, and it's literally like two days long.
Yeah, it's 2 days long. No, I'm just saying that there is a long tradition mm-hmm. of, at one point, movies were very, mm-hmm. quite long. And now
they
gave
you
special.
An intermission at least.
They gave you the intermission.
Like, it was like an event. You like went in a suit to the theater. And you know.
Not every movie warrants a 3 hour running
time. Aquaman does not need to be 2.5 hours.
No, that does not need to be two and a half. However, go and watch some of the long, great movies, like even Gone with the Wind. It's an epic. Some of these things warrant it. And I'm with you. There's so many movies that are way too long because they're just like throwing in extra action
or
extra
crap. And I
agree.
I mean, there's a lot of blockbusters right now that are just way too much.
They're like, every time
it doesn't need to be this long. Like Ben-Hur's, you know, like the great movies. You have to.
Like Gone with the Wind is 4 hours long.
You have to justify your running time.
Yeah. The Right Stuff, I believe, had an intermission.
Those are exceptions to the rule. For every,
but they're double what you're worried about.
I'm not worried. I'm just saying that it seems the pattern. And those are, and Ben-Hur and Gone with the Wind were the exception to the norm. If you go back and look at every movie that's won the best category over the years, I guarantee you most of them have been under 2 hours. I will bet. You want that bet, Tom?
I'll take that bet. I'll take that money.
All right, let's look at I would say anything before 2001. Is that what you're calling?
I just Googled the average running time of movies. Go ahead.
Before 2000.
Before 2000? That's...
That includes your Gone with the Wind and the Ben-Hurs.
Well, then you're just making a bad bet there.
I think you're wrong. I stand by. I think 2 hours is the threshold of pain.
Here from the Business Insider, looking at the average movie length of the 10 highest grossing movies of each year for the past decade, Hollywood blockbusters have gone from just under 2 hours to more than 130 minutes in length.
I will accept Portillo's gift certificates as payment, Tom.
Well, there you go. It's the binge culture, you know.
I'm fine with. There is an article that asks, are movies getting longer? Well, you can go do your own research, Paul.
And you just did. You answered my question. It went from 120 to 139. Is that how I read that?
Our movies getting longer. Here, a lot of them are 145 minutes. Anyway, we'll figure it out. We'll do the math later because we're talking about the Golden Globes, and we've only gotten like three or four categories here.
Because of the length of these movies. It's proving my point.
Okay, so I had a question about the royalty movies. There was the Mary Queen of Scots.
Yes, which got nothing.
Right,
and I really enjoyed it. I think Saoirse Ronan is like the new Meryl Streep. I think she's just going to be showing one amazing layer of her talent after another. She's incredible.
She's mesmerizing.
She is. Yeah. Her and Margot Robbie.
It was, and then of course I had to go down another rabbit hole of research of like, mm-hmm. was her husband, her second husband, gay? You know, that whole thing.
Oh, sure. After you see it, yeah.
Yeah. And kind of the diversity of casting was a little bit interesting. Some of the elements they decided to bring into the Mary Queen of Scots, I thought was fascinating. And then The Favorite, which I thought was really they were presenters, all three of the women in that movie. And
three great actresses. I've always loved Olivia Colman. I'm glad she's finally getting her time in the spotlight. She won the Best Actress in a Comedy. I mean, it's really like the All About Eve in more like a reverent sort of period drama style where the men are all dressed up in such ridiculous like makeup and attire and the women are wearing like no makeup. They're looking very normal. It's like it's a nice shifting of the cliches.
Yeah, she was wonderful. And I loved her speech last night. And then, of course, the one speech. Do we have that audio from Christian Bale? A lot of people are talking about his speech. And what was fascinating as well were how many people could not believe that they couldn't believe his accent.
Oh, yeah. Everyone just keeps forgetting where he's from.
Yes. He saw, like, people have said, oh, my God, this is the worst imitation of a British accent I've ever heard. And you're mm-hmm. like, no.
It's like, did you see Empire of the Sun? Where he's going, I'm British. You know, come on.
He was a kid in that, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
He sounds like a cabbie from England.
Yes. it's true. He's a huge talent.
And I love the connection he was making with his wife while he was up there talking about how, you know, my wife will tell you that sometimes I need to talk less and a lot of those.
But then he talked too much. He's like, oh, did I forget anyone? It's like, oh, just get off the stage if you can't remember.
Yeah, he was worried about missing anybody.
That's
to
right.
think. Do
That's
we have
right.
that little clip that people are talking about today, Tom?
We can just reenact it if he doesn't have it.
Yeah, Liz Cheney was on Twitter, of course.
I'm sure she didn't appreciate it. He said that his inspiration was Satan, I believe, for the role.
Yeah.
And he says, I should just be playing people like this, you know, bleeping bleeps for a long time, like Mitch McConnell. That'll be my next one.
Oh, yeah, that's what he said.
He kept going. Yeah, mm-hmm.
and he actually made a point to talk about the prosthetics, which you and I talked about before the show.
Yes.
Which it was fascinating to watch him. Now, did he gain all that weight for the first part of the movie?
He gained a lot more than he did. Well, I guess he gained 40 pounds. That's kind of what I'm hearing, around 40 pounds. But it looks seamless. It is as good prosthetic work as on Gary Oldman in the Winston Churchill film. And both of those films really, I think, are more acting exercises than anything. And I think he's going to get the Oscar Oldman did. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There aren't any other contenders that you think come like? Because
I don't think anyone
Rhapsody
quite gets to that level of just full-on immersion. Like, I can't believe that's him. That's why he's going to win.
Okay. All right. Just for that alone. Here, let's hear the audio that made some people very upset last night.
Over there, Adam, he said, I've got to find somebody who can be absolutely charisma free.
That's what it was.
And reviled by everybody, so he went, that's got to be Bale in it, you know. Thank you, and for all the competition, I will be cornering the market on charisma free.
There you go.
What do you think, Mitch McConnell next? That could be good, couldn't it?
Oh boy!
They want to see the Mitch McConnell movie now.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah, it's. I don't think they do.
I don't.
So that was from Vice, and then Roma was in Best Foreign Film, but Tom was just talking about this last week. You know, he had picked all of his favorite films of the year, and it sounds as though Roma might be in the Best Film category.
Roma's number three on my top 10 of the year. I thought it was a masterpiece. I think it's incredible, and I think Alfonso Cuarón, the director, has the right attitude about this, where, you know, he's embracing Netflix in the sense that it's a great distribution model to get it out to people who don't live in the big cities, who don't have access to the art house theaters. It's just getting that knowledge out about the movie is important in itself. But then if you are in Chicago, I mean, opening Wednesday at the Music Box Theater is Roma in 70mm, and it's just going to blow your mind, because it is a film that is best seen on the biggest screen possible.
That's what everyone is talking about.
Yeah.
And Tom, did you see it on the big screen or on the on television?
I went the Netflix route because that was what was available to me that day. I was like, I have to see this right now. I've been waiting too long, and I know I'm going to go see it at the Music Box just so I can get that experience. But if you have if you have a nice big TV, and if you have a 4K TV and a Netflix 4K subscription, it looks pretty damn great.
Sure, yeah.
It's amazing. But I am very excited to see it as it was intended to be seen.
It's an amazing film. And again, with all this talk about the wall and the border and the government shutdown, it's just a great film to see about Mexican identity, about celebrating people who are on the margins, about the people, you know, kind of like what Glenn Close was saying, the women who don't really get the credit, who are the nurturers. I mean, that's what Rome is about. It's about a woman who is kind of like the surrogate mother to these kids of the client she works for. It's a wonderful, wonderful film.
I'm looking forward. I watched the first 10 or 15 minutes and I realized, you know what? I really do need to commit to seeing it on a bigger screen or a better quality than I am right now.
And once you get into the rhythm of the movie, it like washes over you, literally.
I was going to say, because the water is such a strong element in the very beginning. Let's take a break here. We're hanging out with Paul Farvar, comedian and lawyer. I just like saying that, Paul. It's just fun to say Esquire. And a little bit later, we're going to talk about what's going on around town, because January is a really slow month you know, going out, going to restaurants, going to theater, seeing comedy. So
now people have more time with
the football.
Bears are.
And we have Matt Fagerholm. He is assistant editor, along with two others.
I'm just teasing.
From RogerEbert.com. You can also visit indie-outlook.com for all the great work he does. More in a moment on 720 WGN. last night. A lot of talk about the winners and the losers and about the energy of the show. We are hanging out in studio with comedian Paul Farivar Esquire, and we also have the assistant editor for RogerEbert.com, Matt Fagerholm. He's also got a lot of great work on indie-outlook.com. What did you think about the hosts last night and the pace of the show? Because it was awkward.
I thought they were good-natured, likable. Yes. They just didn't have very good material to go with. I know the whole vibe of the show is supposed to be upbeat and nice. They have Andy Samberg and Sandra Oh. And Sandra Oh very particularly chosen because I think largely because of the great success of Crazy Rich Asians. Mm-hmm. It was a big box office success. It was nominated for Best Comedy. And I thought it was great. I think she's the first Asian host in the whole history of the show. And I thought it was just more like a feel good thing. Like they weren't there to razz people. That was kind of the joke. Like, oh, we're gonna go all Ricky Gervais on you. But that wasn't the point. It was really more they were trying to do like a feel good thing.
There was an awkward moment where they were talking about the cast of This Is Us coming up.
Oh,
and
I was like,
oh, I felt that cast's uncomfortableness with being introduced as like with the Kleenex and rather than be crying over it.
That's right. Oh
yes,
yeah,
that was a
that's
weird
right.
joke.
Yeah, that was weird.
They were like,
it was not good writing. It was whoever wrote the jokes that night didn't work very well.
And I think Paul will attest to this. If it's not something that you, because a lot of comics will collaborate with a lot of writers.
Sure.
But if you're an actor, maybe it's not necessarily in your wheelhouse. Although you would think that he would have been like, meh, maybe.
Yeah.
Or he like pushing the envelope a little bit by saying that word before bringing out the cat. I'm not going to repeat it because it makes people uncomfortable.
And well, you need someone to work with too. I was kind of like Anne Hathaway trying so hard and Franco giving her nothing. Like you need to have it both ways. You know?
A little bit. A little bit. So speaking of the Golden Globes, the best TV, best drama, I think a lot of people wanted to see The Americans win. They loved this show.
Brilliant show. Carrie Russell's incredible. I know she didn't win, but I mean, she's won in the past, I believe. And I'm just glad that show keeps going strong after all this time.
I agree.
In our time of Russian collusion, it's just fantastic.
I know. Who knew that was going to feel so real?
I know.
When they started the series,
it's like watching Veep. It's like it's just becoming more and more our reality.
It feels too real.
Yes.
It feels too real. We were talking a little bit about the Green Book, and the best actor went to, how do I say his name? Mahershala Ali.
Mahershala Ali for supporting actor, yes. Even though I think he's pretty much a co-lead with Viggo Mortensen, but I guess that's one of the problems of the movie. It should have been more about Mahershala Ali anyway.
Right, so. That's probably something that people felt as well. We also, one of the wins last night that I was kind of excited by because his parents were there, and I know you haven't seen The Bodyguard, but
I need to see that.
Yes.
Netflix?
Yeah, it's a Netflix.
Another great Netflix show.
I think it's only 6 episodes, and it's a good thriller, I thought.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that tremendously. Paul, Tom, neither one of you have seen The Bodyguard?
I haven't seen it, but I know there was a little bit of confusion for American viewers with that show because
of the title.
Well, the title, and then also the accents threw people off. So you know when he says to like the Home Secretary, he calls her ma'am,
right?
But with his accent, it sounds like he's saying mom.
Oh,
so they literally, American audiences literally thought he was in a sexual relationship with his mother.
See, that's when I just hit that subtitle button right away. It's like, okay.
Boom.
I have to clear this up.
Well, there's a series called
Bodyguard.
The Bodyguard. Yeah. It's not about the Whitney. It's nothing like the Whitney
ask.
Houston.
Okay.
No.
It could have been improved with a little Dolly, maybe. You know, singing the original.
Version
there
of the song. Yeah.
A little bit of singing. What were some of your other favorite wins? Because I loved Patricia Clarkson winning for Sharp Objects.
I love Sharp Objects. I wanted that to sweep it, although
me
I have
too.
Not seen the Johnny Versace show, so I know I probably should see that eventually. But yeah, Sharp Objects was a masterpiece. That Jean-Marc Vallée, who also did Big Little Lies, I don't know what he does with the subliminal editing. But it's like when I read the Gillian Flynn book after watching Sharp Objects, it's like, this is like the book where it's like cut to this flashback and all of a sudden you're in this part of her youth. And but it was so seamless. I just thought it was brilliantly structured, the whole show.
I have to say, yes, Sharp Objects. I mean, Amy Adams
Amazing.
Just blew me away. I had read the book years ago.
Mm.
It was like a, trade a book situation. And
yeah.
It was just on the shelf, this new author before she had written
Gone
Girl.
I think it was her debut novel. Yeah.
It was. And I thought it would make an interesting movie, but I thought, it's just so dark, but to make it a limited series, I was floored by that.
Yes.
I mean, the elements of it was, you could feel the heat and the stickiness of Missouri through the whole thing.
And that building tension, and for Big Little Lies, when that ended, I mean, it was like watching The Sixth Sense for the first time, where it was just like full-on body chills, like I did not see that coming. I was like, lightning can't strike twice, and the way Sharp Objects ends, it's even better than the novel, the way
it does.
It is jaw-dropping.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Because when I read the book, I was like, oh, this is too dark. I mean, I read the book and I didn't want to recommend it to people because of how kind of dirty it made me feel.
Sure.
Like kind of icky.
Sure, like you need a shower afterwards.
Yeah, it was hard. Let's take a break here. Our conversation continues after the news on 720. We're going to take a break, then the news, and continue having a conversation on 720 WGN. Now it's Tuesday morning. I think I need to start getting in the habit of, Tom, one of the things that I've always contended is it's not the next day until I go to bed and wake up.
I think that's right. I think that's the right way to do it.
Matt, how do you live your life? Is it now Tuesday morning or is it still Monday night?
It's usually I'm in bed at this point. I'm an old man. I'm, 32, so I have to be in bed at the by midnight.
Paul, where do you stand on this issue?
I think it's still Monday. Until I go to bed, it's still Monday.
Okay.
For me.
Yeah. Right. Until dawn breaks is it truly Tuesday.
Well, see, when Nick D comes in, he'll be in at 1. It is because he starts on Tuesday. It is Tuesday morning.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
So it kind of works out that way. Yeah.
I still consider it like Monday night. But I get it. I get what you're saying. I understand the argument.
You understand the argument.
It's a good argument. Unlike the argument that Tom Hush made earlier about movies not being long.
Movies should be long, though. That's what Roger said.
I love long
movies. No good movie's too long.
I love long movies.
No bad movie is short enough. So.
Well, my effort to see more of the nominated films, either for Golden Globes or for the Screen Actors Guild, which I get to vote for, I ended up watching Kill Bill. I can't remember why it came up in my rotation. I watched something, and it said...
That was the first Tarantino movie I ever saw.
Was it really?
Yes, it was.
Mine was Reservoir Dogs. That's why we were talking about it, too, is Reservoir Dogs was a film we had done a scene from. We take classic movie scenes.
Oh, wonderful.
And we reenact them in a way that makes it impossible for you to enjoy the movie ever again. So we did the, you don't tip scene.
Oh, of course.
And I admitted that I've never seen Kill Bill, which seemed to really bother Tom Hush.
Yeah.
That I had never seen.
I haven't seen it either.
I'm just obsessed with Tarantino, and I know he's a difficult figure, but I love his movies so much.
Kill Bill always being my favorite because it's a symphony of all these diverse movie genres just colliding, and Uma Thurman is just so.
Are you a volume one or a volume two guy?
I love them both for different reasons. They're entirely different.
I'm big on volume two. Big ups on volume two of Kill Bill.
Well, and of course, Lucy Liu, who I saw last night
Lucy
at the Golden
Globes. Oh, so fantastic.
She's so good in that. And, and the girl. It's funny how many, not tropes, but I guess elements of. Whether it's action films or culture that we know for the, I don't know much about the films that Tarantino bases his movies on. They're all like samurai films.
It was a samurai Western, like spaghetti Western kind of mashup.
That's right. Yeah. It's wild. It's gritty too. There's a lot of blood.
Yes.
And then there's like that switch from animation to.
The animated scene is the goriest scene.
Yes.
In the film. Yeah.
It was really cool. Now, so you're saying I need to see Kill Bill 2 as well because it doesn't end in the garden.
No, you got to have the whole bloody affair.
Yes. There you go.
Well, there you go. So, seeing Lucy Liu last night, and you were mentioning the fact that Sandra Oh might have been a strategic move.
Oh, I think so. I think it was very much. Yeah.
And I have not seen, because Paul just texted me and apologized for not seeing most of the movies and TV shows that were
nominated. That's right. That's why you got me.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, for a short list, what should Paul see? You said you had a list of your favorite films.
Before you tell me those,
besides,
I don't see horror movies. I don't see gory movies. I don't like comic book stuff or period pieces.
Oh my god! So pretty much everything.
I'm just that being said, everything else is open.
You can just watch The Firm on repeat.
One of the greatest movies of all time, Tom. And guess what? It's under 2 hours. I bet.
I bet it is.
No, it is not.
I think
I can
you're right.
Prove
actually,
that. That's a long movie.
Oh, my favorite
it takes
film
its time.
My favorite film in 2018 was definitely under 2 hours, and it was a film called Eighth Grade by Bo Burnham, who is a online comic.
Actually, I want to see that. No,
yes.
I listened to him on Mark Maron's podcast talking about the film.
It was a brilliant debut feature.
It's great.
And it's about a young girl, 15 years old. Last week of middle school, and if middle school was hell for you as it was for most people, it seems like it's a rite of passage. Everyone has to go through the hell of high school, some or junior high. And I just thought it was a brilliant look at what it's like at that age, but it's also the age that we're all in right now. We're all kind of stuck in this kind of junior high mentality of like the social media preying on our worst instincts of like, okay, is this person following me? How popular am I? How do I look at this?
Imagine.
And we have a junior high, schoolyard bully as our president right now. So it's we're all kind kind of stuck in junior high. So that movie was like the movie of the year for me.
Were you surprised the foreign press didn't give it any nod?
I mean, I was surprised that it did get a nod, which was Elsie Fisher up for Best Actress in a Comedy. So I was very happy she got it.
Go.
And she started as the little girl in Despicable Me. And this is like her first big like live action role. And she's wonderful in the movie.
She's great. She looks like Amy Adams. But I also want to make this point, since we're talking about social media, follow me on Twitter and Instagram. It's just Paul Farvar.
And the Singles Only Podcast.
And Singles Only Podcast.
There you go. There you go.
One of the funniest stories we have ever heard on the Singles Only Podcast was
It just got released today.
This guy, he decided to start taking chances in his dates. And
comedian Joe Quazala.
Yeah, basically saying, you know, that idea of just saying yes to whatever.
Oh, yes. That's, which is the rule in improv, right? It's like,
he's always
say
saying yes.
Allegedly. Yeah.
And he didn't even, like, after the interview, he told us, this horror story went on and on.
There's more. We ran out of time, yeah.
Yeah, and
it's a great.
I've got to see that.
Funniest, this is the one.
You can listen to it. It's on Singles Only Podcast, wherever you podcast. It is literally we've had over 130 episodes.
Oh, fantastic.
It's the most my face has hurt after that story.
It was
Patty
crazy.
And I were just looking at each other like, when is this is real?
I mean, there was any moment where you were worried that Joe might say, and then she pulled out a knife.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, never know where it's
or
going.
At any moment, you're like, and that's when I almost died.
People are responding to it today. It just was dropped today, so people are liking it a lot. But
that's the Singles Only Podcast, and I love that one of your followers said that they've already downloaded 10 just today.
Oh,
they listened to like 5 hours. Did you see that in your Instagram account?
No, I didn't.
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool.
I will have to check that out. Absolutely.
Are you single?
Yes.
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 So this is
happily so for now, but we'll see.
Fair enough. Well, here's the thing is I can't. So I ride along as the voice of treason because I'm happily married. I have two kids.
Yeah.
I enjoy being married. And so it's basically Paul he can't believe that that's even possible.
Yeah.
And two, he sort of revels in his branding as being a single young guy.
Absolutely.
Young. Do you like that?
So cute.
You're right.
All right.
But I'm kind of mostly I spend the whole time going, what?
Yeah.
How does that work? How do you what?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine. You were mentioning eighth grade and living so publicly on social media.
Absolutely.
I can't imagine dating this way.
Oh, no.
Right.
It's like you just feel like you're a member of the Island of the Misfit Toys and it's not. It just doesn't work. At least how it's done, you know, now. I don't know.
Yes.
I did hear a lot about that movie. And Bo Burnham was in the Big Sick. He played the friend of
yes. He was great in the
Camille.
Big Sick.
He did a really good job in that too.
Maybe you should just not do comedy anymore. I think it was one of his lines.
Oh man!
Do you remember? You saw the Big Sick, right?
I just started watching it. Do you know what's funny about that? So I actually worked with
Camille,
and I came up a little bit. He started after I started doing stand up.
Oh.
So he's really. It's funny because I was like trying to see. I was like, I wonder if he'll do some of the bits that he did around that period. Like, about trying to finish someone's crossword puzzle when you're on the train and stuff like that. But he did different material haven't gotten through the whole movie. The first 10 minutes are uncomfortable for me only because I was in those green rooms with him and it wasn't like that. So
I'm always like looking at that when he's those characters that are in The Big Sick, which I thought was a great movie.
I loved it. It's Ray Romano's like best role too.
Oh yeah, Ray Romano was so good in that. And that's like one of the last good movies that I saw. But I always want to picture like who's that supposed to be because I'm always like that's got to be someone that we know.
Are like amalgams? Do you think they're just
right? I mean, it's a combination of people. He's talked about it on different podcasts, but I always want to like next time I see him, I'm gonna be like, so is that so and so?
I was kind of hurt that I wasn't. You know, I haven't seen the whole thing yet, but I'm just.
I saw the first 10 minutes.
We didn't work.
Well, he moved to. Yeah, I don't know if there's a character that could be you.
Which one? I don't think so. We have on the line with us someone who wants to go back to the Golden Globes, and I'm thrilled to do that. This was one of my favorite moments of the evening as well. Doc, what do you want to say? Hey, Doc.
Hey, two quick things. First, highlights for me were Carol Burnett and Jeff Bridges.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
Carol Burnett came to accept the honor, but she has something to say, and I think she gave a real articulate and cogent dressing down of the industry. How there could not be a show like hers today, that they had a 27-piece orchestra, 65 costumes, two guest hosts. But the real highlight of the evening for me was Jeff Bridges. It seemed totally unrehearsed. I think he's fantastic. The montage made me think, God, I've seen him in so many great movies, but there's a bunch of stuff I haven't seen him in. But then he talked about he's wearing his dad's cufflinks, and he said, and these are his dad's cufflinks.
Yes.
And then his story about the night before Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. where he said, I can't get a handle on this character. And Cimino said, you're a big bag. Mm-hmm. He says, you're it, man. And then his whole discussion about the weather on big tanker ships and the energy to turn a big ship and the small rudder on the big rudder is called the trim tab. And he said, that's all of us. And without, you know, tipping his hand on what his political bend is or, you know, I'm part of the resist or anything, he just said, you know, the power of one person to affect the big scheme of things. And he's just such a positive, ebullient guy that I think that was, they just showed some real class to the evening.
You bring up a great moment with Jeff Bridges. I was yelling at the TV every time. I was like, oh, Last Picture Show, you know.
And, yes, Last Picture Show.
My God,
if
Tron,
you have not seen that one, sir, that's the first one you should start with. It's a masterpiece.
It's incredible. Yeah. But did you notice, Doc, Matt, and I know that, Paul, you didn't see this, but when Jeff Bridges mentioned that he didn't feel like he had a handle on the role and they cut to some of the people in the audience, like they've all been there.
Yes.
An actor at some point in their career goes, I don't feel this.
Yeah, or they feels like he's going to be fired, and then it cuts to Nicole Kidman. She said that in interviews, like, she feels like she's still going to be fired on every project, no matter how successful she gets.
They all think they're going to be the Eric Stoltz of Back to the Future.
Yes, exactly. Oh, God. I've seen those outtakes. I think it's around. Yeah.
That's such a great thought there, Doc. Thank you so much for reminding me, because it's hard to go through the whole thing. Yeah. What'd you think of the entire show, Doc?
I work 70 hours a week. That's why I get to listen to you guys, because I'm driving from Kansas City to St. Louis. But a bunch of that TV stuff, you know, if it's not on cable or regular TV, I don't see it.
Right.
So there might be five things in one category, and I didn't know any of them.
Yeah.
So
like
the movies, I've seen almost everything.
Oh.
But when I see shows like this, I go, man, I got to see The Green Book. You know, I got to see Beale Street.
Yeah.
You know, I just saw the At Eternity's Gate with Willem Dafoe, you know. And I've already seen Vice and, you know, a bunch of the stuff. I'm a movie guy, independent film, documentaries.
That's great. You've done your homework. That's great. You've seen At Eternity's Gate.
That's my niche.
Speaking of documentaries, did you see the greatest documentary of all time about Fred Rogers?
I have not seen that yet, but I want to.
How dare you?
That's not what Fred Rogers would say. He'd say, you're special in the way you are, and you'll see that on your own time.
Hey, Doc, so you said you're driving. Are you a truck driver?
I am a bank courier, so I got a bunch of bank work.
Oh.
It's non-money related that I'm going to go to St. Louis. I'll be there about 10 minutes.
Did you see the mule?
Make the turn and catch Nick and listen to those guys from 1 to 5.
Oh, wow. So a lot of driving for you.
And I've already been to Des Moines today from Kansas City, too. Today's 1,100 miles, 21 hours.
Oh, my God.
What? Okay, Doc.
That's what keeps,
my
wife and her lifestyle, to which she's become accustomed.
How do you, okay, what are some of your tricks for driving that far? Because I've got like four, maybe six hours tops in me driving in a stretch. What do you have any tricks for how you pull that off?
You know, Dr. Oz said the 15-20 minute nap.
Yeah.
I have a small timer with me.
Okay.
And if I'm starting to fight it, I pull off as fast as I can, get 15 or 20 minutes, drink Diet Pepsi. Medicinal cannabis.
Listen
to the talk radio.
That's
the mental stimulation. I mean, if I'm dragging, music won't do it. Lively conversation with intelligent hip people.
I am the same way.
That's just your MO here.
I love that. So do you, when you pull over to sleep, do you have certain locations? Because I used to sleep as a comic and I was on the road all the time. I would pull over and sleep in either church parking lots or near police stations.
Oh, that's smart.
I won't do rest stops because if something were to happen and the car not start, I want to be in a commercial place. I mean, I've got the highest level AAA, but I'll stop at a major interchange that's got several convenience stores and outside a 24-hour convenience store.
So these are some long-haul and little tips for people who have to be on the road all the time. Well, Doc, be safe, and thank you so much for calling and joining the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I love that you're staying awake to me. Be well. More in a moment on The Patty Raskas Show. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Right back in a moment. You're listening to WGN Radio. It's The Patty V Show. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Nick is coming up at 1 a.m. And if you want to follow me on Facebook, you can go to Patty V Show. That's P-A-T-T-I-V Show. And you can follow me on Twitter at Patty Raskas, C-H-I. Joining me in studio is the assistant editor from RogerEbert.com, and you can also go to indie-out, outlook.com for all the great work that Matt Fagerholm does. And he was asking me, Paul Farvar, Esquire, mm-hmm. comedian, about...
Also, how, before you go into yes. that, what song was... Who sang that song just now?
Can you play a little bit more of it?
just for the record.
Okay. No. We can keep playing for a few seconds. So, Matt, full disclosure here, since we are now becoming friends.
Yes.
I love music.
Oh, yes.
I can dance. Of course. But I'm like our listener who called a little bit ago, Doc, who said that he listens to talk radio.
Yes.
I grew up listening to comedy, talk radio.
Exactly.
More older music, like from the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
You were listening to the music I grew up with.
There you go.
There,
a lot of Bing Crosby and Dean Martin.
A little Benny Goodman, perhaps.
Oh, yes.
Do you know who this is, Matt?
No. Oh, all right. I should.
I'm a little bit surprised. I'm personally,
It's also because it's 12:30, so I don't.
No, it's okay.
My mind's not as sharp.
So, Paul, go ahead. Tell me.
It's Duran Duran.
Oh, of course.
Girls
okay.
on film.
And I'm sure if I had like a movie image that played during mm-hmm. at some point, I'd be like, oh yes, Duran Duran.
If there
Duran,
was a movie image, Patty still wouldn't have.
No, it's true.
She'd say Counting Crows.
I would not be able to do.
I know most 70s music because of Tarantino. So there you go. I need the film reference to somehow.
And that's
sync it up.
When going back to Doc's call, when Jeff Bridges, when they were doing that montage, I mean, I was screaming out. I'm like, oh, True Grit.
And exactly.
I mean, that's, you know, all those images. I
love Sam Elliott narrating that too in character from the Lebowski thing.
Yes,
it's great.
Yes, yeah, about the dude. Yeah. So to that, now the problem is because we have a segment called Patty's Appalling Lack of Musical Knowledge.
Is that true? Okay.
Yes, it is. And listeners have they can listen to part of a song and decide, because for the most part, as Paul is just he's flabbergasted every single time I can't name an artist.
Yeah.
The problem for me and my family now is that when I'm listening to the radio, like tonight I was in the shower and I go, this is George Michael. I get so excited when I do know the artist. I don't always know the song.
Totally.
But yes.
But you made a point how it's you just realize the downside of it when you do like a song. Now you can't.
Oh, so I have Google. I have a Google Mini at home.
Oh.
It's not now, Paul. This has been since we got this device in my house. I mean, I've got like maybe 5 or 6 artists. I'm like, I can't think of anything else to ask my Google Mini to play.
It just doesn't.
I don't know.
Doesn't work when you're like, play that song by the guys who sound like Counting Crows but aren't Counting Crows, because I don't really know what Counting Crows sound like.
And the Google Mini just like, again?
Work.
Really?
Yeah.
Again?
I have to do things like play music like Florence and the Machine, because I've already listened to all of the Florence and the Machine songs. Yeah.
It's like, play that song that's not Led Zeppelin, but I always think is Led Zeppelin.
Right, that's going to have to be...
It's also like, just play the music when, you know, she's punching her way out of the coffin in Kill Bill. It's like, okay, and then, you know, so they need the movie references.
I do a lot of movie soundtracks, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll ask, Guardians of the Galaxy has a great soundtrack.
That's just, tailor-made for that sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all music from the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's perfect.
A movie mixtape, which is what, you know, Kill Bill is, too. It's a mixtape.
Yeah. That works for me. So there you go, Paul. Yes, I cannot... I don't even know what playlist to ask for, because like, if I say play music from the 70s, I'm like, by the fourth song, I'm like, I don't know this song.
Play all next the songs song. I know by Pat Benatar. Oh, wait, there's only two.
Now there's three. There's three now. Hit Me With Your Best Shot, Love Is a Battlefield, and We Belong. I got three. Actually, I was listening to the whole thing, and I'm like, I don't know the rest of these songs. It is. See how appalling it is?
Oh, I know. I think it's entertaining. You know, it's good material to work from, I think.
I was in the car.
Entertaining.
I was in the car. I mean, I do. I scream all the time now when I know the artists. I'm like, Beatles! It's very exciting for me to know something. I wanted to ask you guys, okay, first of all, have you ever been in the unfortunate situation where you've run over an animal?
Thankfully not yet. I mean, maybe there's been a squirrel here and there. I'm not sure. But
there was, I was on my way to Springfield, and I drive in the middle of the night sometimes, because I'll leave right after my show to go down to Springfield for various things. And, so I was on the road, and at the very, I just saw this possum's head look up into my, I saw the lights flashing off of his pupils.
Oh, it's the worst.
And there was nothing. It was nothing I could do. I felt horrible.
And it's better than careening off the road and hitting a tree, probably.
It is. I just wish that I had, you have to be nimble.
Yeah.
You have to have really good reflexes. Have you ever, Paul?
In the last 3 months, I've almost hit a deer on two separate occasions.
Ooh,
on the road. On the road, which was scary. But I think I hit a squirrel when I was younger, and that's it.
Oh, that's the worst thing,
I've hit rats all the time. Actually, I shouldn't say. I did hit.
Do you aim for rats?
No, I don't aim for them. But I go into my alley late at night, when I park, mm-hmm. all of a sudden they'll all pop out, and it's like too late.
You're like Cinderella. All the animals.
I feel my car's going over them, and I feel bad. But then they're not there, so like they've run away with some light damage.
Yeah. Now, Tom, have you ever had to forgive yourself?
I think I hit a bird once, but I considered that, like, you know, it made its choice. You flew out in front of a Volvo XC90.
You feel it was a kamikaze?
There was something wrong with that bird. He was either dissatisfied with his lot in life, or
it was from Bodega Bay. That's where.
Yeah.
Just dive bomb in your head.
He's just like, nah, I'm out, fam. And that was it.
By the way, I am not a possum hater. I really by the way, in the United States, I looked this up because I was sending an article to Tom and to Paul. Yeah. It's a possum. We use the O. That's what in Australia is the you drop the O. It's a different breed or different. I didn't get into all the
details.
They're
all marsupials, though, right?
Yes, I believe they're all marsupials. But okay, in college, I had a friend who, during the summers, his job was to go and clean up roadkill. He'd get a shovel, drive his. Yeah, they would get, because there are requests. People will, you know, call the state agencies, and they have salvage now. There are some states that there's a growing number of states that are going to make it legal for you to be able to pick up those carcasses and eat them.
Oh,
I think that's okay.
I guess it depends if you know how to cook it, I suppose.
It's making it less wasteful. I mean, yeah. I there's deer and stuff in those towns. I always see them. And I mean, what?
I'm sorry. I'm not laughing.
As long as it's not like too much time has passed. If it's at nighttime, fresh?
Well, here's my concern. Now, if you can do this, are people going to start aiming for them?
Oh, good thinking.
That's what my grandfather used to do in Scotland.
Really?
Yeah, he would drive to work, and he would always drive by this pheasant farm. And that's how my dad knew that, you know, they were going to be eating good that night, is if he came home with a dead pheasant in the grill of the car.
Oh,
now,
man.
Who in their right mind is going to aim for deer with their car? Unless you have some cars is like Jay Leno or something. Like, how many cars can you really wreck?
Yeah, I mean, but you've really got to want that possum.
Yeah.
I mean, a possum.
Can't eat raccoon, though, right? That's not healthy. I heard something.
No, that's bad for you. It's really gamey and bad for you.
Or skunk? Trash animals. Anyone want to eat skunk? Tonight?
So like, what would they aim for, Patty? I don't know.
Possum, apparently.
If you have a truck, I think you can beat a deer with that, with limited damage. I don't know. I've never had a truck.
Well, and how much are you going to be able to rescue or salvage in order to cook?
Yeah, because if you bruise the meat.
If there's a lot
of bleeding, and if the meat gets bruised, you can't eat it. You can't eat that.
This is not a good late night. This is just going to be becoming like a nightmare.
Oh, I've had worse.
This discussion.
I hope I don't get any complaints, because I to those who are animal lovers, this is just I am being very matter of fact about this. How many states do you think are there currently that allow people to scoop dead animals off the road?
I can't believe it's plural. I thought it was just like one state was doing this.
Four.
Mm-mm.
Eight.
No. No.
27.
20 states.
What?
Wow. It is legal to scoop dead animals off the road and serve them for dinner. Washington, Pennsylvania, Georgia,
Oregon. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
Mississippi and Alabama for sure. And Florida, I'm sure.
Montanans can collect dead moose. Georgians can scoop up road-killed bears.
I like this conversation because I was hungry before, and now I'm not hungry.
Well, there you go. Perfect.
This is totally
cut down on your midnight snack intake.
This will be what's Paul not eating tonight. Yeah.
We haven't done that in a while, Patty.
Okay, so Paul has this. Okay, this is a perfect. Actually, we'll move away from eating roadkill to something that I've been wanting to talk to Tom Hush about on the air for a while. And Paul's trying to figure out what the transition, how I'm pivoting. Okay. So there's a thing I have. I cannot stand the sound of people eating with their mouths open. I can't stand the sound.
Or chewing sounds.
I cannot. Yeah, chewing sounds. Well, there's a lot of auditory things that I can't. Like, sure. It throws me off. In a movie theater, too much crinkling, chewing, all kind of like smacking.
Or if it's happening on the big screen, too. There's a scene in Spider-Man 2 where Tobey Maguire is giving this monologue and he licks his lips after every word. I'm just like, stop it! Just just there, stop. There was, just, there's like little things that just get to you sometimes.
You make a really good point. And when people lick their lips or I see too much of their tongue, it makes me crazy.
I don't know why. And I'm not hating on him. I like him as an actor. I was like, what do you...
What's that tongue thing? So Paul has a segment that I've tried to put the kibosh on. Andrea Darlis and I took a night off and Andrea brought it back for a night, which is what is Paul eating? So he would chew into a microphone on the air and people would guess.
It was like a trivia.
So, yeah, we may do it again at some point when I can,
I've already sold the rights to it to the Game Show Network.
You win some half-eaten food for the prize?
We do give away prizes, so I feel badly. We'll have to figure out a better way to give away prizes. Now, Tom, the reason so all week, I will refrain from wearing a type of material that you also, because for me, like even just thinking about people chewing with their mouth, like it makes my face burn. Yeah. It's very hard. You have something that is similar.
Yeah, I've got it's another sensory thing. It's touch, and it has to do with the fabric velvet or corduroy.
Oh, corduroy, too.
I can't do corduroy. It literally makes my skin crawl, and it's nails on a chalkboard. It's just the worst thing in the world, and it's even worse because at the movie theater I work at, we have this big velvet skull.
Oh, skull.
Yeah, it's a skull. It was a Halloween decoration that everybody kept, and we call it Mrs. Skelvet. And just to bother me, sometimes the other employees would be like, hey, Tom, and they'll go and they'll touch the skull. And it drives me literally insane.
I have to visit this theater. Is it blue velvet? Is it like a Lynchian blue velvet?
Oh, it feels like it's like a nightmare. If that's what we're getting at. It's like, oh, God, it's the worst. And it's ever since I was a child. I can't even the sound of someone touching it, the thought of someone touching velvet. It is just the worst feeling in the world.
I'm the same way with satin
and silk.
Right?
Yeah. What?
I don't like... Oh. My parents used to have a silk like bedspread, and they would put it on the bed so we wouldn't jump on the bed. Or I wouldn't jump on the bed.
So you were just afraid of sliding off?
I don't like the feel of touching. Velvet I'm okay with, but...
But you know what I mean, where it's like even getting near it.
Sure, my friend had that same issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's... So, Matt... no, I'm not going to...
What are my velvet issues?
Well, the thing is, I have about, I would say, seven or eight full-length velvet dresses. I bought them after President Trump won the election.
Oh.
Because I felt like things were going to get a little bit hard to, you know, to deal with when it came to news stories. Yes. And I figured I couldn't eat mashed potatoes every day as my comfort food, but I could wear velvet every day.
Oh, there you go.
So And I wear them as a comfort clothing. So it's kind of, it's almost like wearing a very luxury, like really nice nightgown, but it looks pretty, fortunately for me
there
as well.
You go. And like a fashionable snuggie sort of thing.
It is. I mean, it's the most comfortable thing I own.
Yes.
And I also before like Tom just having a really hard time, but I also before Christmas there was something that went on sale. I found these velvet pants that are now my favorite thing to
velvet
wear.
Velvet pants.
Velvet leggings. To the best. And I
we
realized,
are just torturing Tom right now.
Well, that's the thing. So we were in another studio. Tom was producing for me one night, and I realized I was wearing them. I forgot, and I kept trying to like stand behind the I don't know if you noticed that, Tom.
I did.
I was trying to get away from you.
My brain was literally screaming. I was just like, I was in hell. This was my personal hell.
Yeah, it was.
But luckily, it was the velvet was you were wearing it, and I was like, well, I like Patty, so I guess I'll focus on Patty, not what she's wearing.
Yes, that was
horrible devil material.
So I will not. I will refrain from. Which is fine. I don't. You know, I have plenty of other clothes.
I can always just bird box it and just kind of like.
There you go.
The blindfold over my eyes.
That was a silly movie.
630 says that feeling you have when you have a hangnail on velvet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
That's horrible. Is this person, and why are they trying to torture me?
Oh, sorry. How about from by the way, 773 says, I feel the same way about corduroy. My skin crawls just from the feel of it.
Dude, I'm there. I'm there with you, brother.
I have a support group. This is a support group forming of this.
I have not worn corduroy, like not pants. I remember when I was a kid. Like, that was really popular when I was growing up. Was corduroy pants. But I have this joke, actually, Paul. Have you ever heard me talk about this? Because I have thunder thighs, which I'm okay with. My coach in softball in high school told me that I had thunder thighs.
It should be a superhero name, though.
Thunder thighs? I think so, too. I am built like a quarter horse. I have teeny tiny ankles and big thighs because I can sprint. So that was why. But I haven't worn corduroy because that's I don't have a thigh gap. This is a safety hazard for me to wear. So I would burst into flames if I wore corduroy. So although I think that Tom would probably appreciate that. Oh, they're on fire.
Yeah. I'd probably burst into flames first because I would just be like, nope, this is it.
By the way, if I see satin, I cannot refrain from touching it. That's from the 815. I have satin pillows, actually. I love it. Yeah. It's supposed to be...
Someone bought me silk boxers once. I was like, no thanks.
Oh, that would be weird. That's not really... I guess I'm sure there's some men that appreciate
some
that
feel.
Some
people like it.
Perhaps.
My dad likes silk a lot.
Liberace.
I would think we have a gather...
My dad and Liberace both like it.
There you go. Let's take a quick break. Tell me something good. By the way, Trucker Rich says... Trucker Rich, who is obviously one of our great listeners, joins the conversation all the time, says that, good evening, Patty. Trucker Rich, your guy's conversation tonight is giving new meaning to hot off the grill in relation to the roadkill. Hot off the grill.
Nice.
More in a moment on 720 WGN. Tell me something good. 312-981-7200. Again, the number's 312-981-7200.
A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
As we wind down and turn the station over to Nick D in just a few moments, we know there's always something you can celebrate no matter what's going on in your life. You can take a moment to be grateful, something that's making you happy, something that makes you smile. Actually, my tonight something good is that we got to meet and welcome to the studio Matt Fagerholm from RogerEbert.com and from indie-outlook.com as well.
It has been such a pleasure. You guys are such a blast to talk to. I'm having a great time. We could just talk about the Globes forever, seriously.
We can come back.
So many awards things to discuss.
There's a ton going on in the future.
Absolutely.
And you were asking about, so I wanted to share with you, you asked about the difference between doing this studio and when we used to be on Michigan Avenue.
Yes, yeah.
I miss the old studios, don't you?
I liked it.
It was a lot of fun there.
Street level.
And even in the building itself, because the Chicago Tribune is obviously this altar to the First Amendment, and when you would walk in the lobby and you'd have all these great quotes about what it means to represent, you know, to be the voice of the people.
Absolutely.
It was wonderful. Here, though, I mean, let me be honest with you. The Trib Tower made it very easy to want to leave.
Oh, interesting.
They were done with us. Wouldn't you say, Tom? They were like, here's the door.
By the end.
Yeah, they were done with us.
Oh, that's a shame.
So, I got some souvenirs, though, I will say.
Yes.
I just love that building. I just love the
Isn't
look
it?
Of that building.
It's beautiful.
I hope they don't tear it down.
No, it's going to be retail condos. And condos.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeehaw.
Do you guys get to keep all the bricks, though? Like, I just saw all the historic bricks on the side.
Funny you should ask.
What are they doing with that?
Well, as far as the pieces from around the world, I think that they are preserving them, and I think there's a plan to either put them back in or have some place to display them. However, funny you should ask about parts of the station. Somebody on Facebook, there's a pair of doors that are being sold on Facebook, like, you know how you can sell stuff, and they're asking for like $700 to $900 for our old WGN, like the glass doors that used to be in sales.
Oh, wow.
Which is so weird that none of us thought to take those.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
there was a lot of stuff left over.
There was a lot.
Plus, if I had a truck,
I know.
We would have made some money.
Well, we also were not allowed to go into the dumpsters. The security would come on the PA. If anyone tried to, there were doors. There were parts of walls. There was all kinds of stuff.
That's
and if you
so
tried,
weird.
Yeah, if you tried a dumpster dive and get any of those,
but before
things,
the dumpster, everything was free game. For that, those
for a
last,
while.
Yeah,
for a while. Did you get anything, Tom?
I think I got like an old Argo tea cup. I think maybe Rokan drink out of it. I don't know.
Oh, there you go. We put that in the Museum of Broadcast History. I love that. Tell me something good, Matt. What's your something good?
What's something good? There were a lot of great films directed by women this year. I'm just going to give one plug. There's a film called Leave No Trace that's by this woman, Deborah Granick, who did Winter's Bone, that was the launching pad for Jennifer Lawrence. And in this film, she has an amazing performance. This young woman, Thomason Harcourt McKenzie, whose mother is Nicole Kidman's acting coach, actually, by the way. And this girl is going to be a gigantic presence on film in the years to come. She is so marvelous, and Ben Foster is her father, and it's this father who's raising his daughter in the wilderness. He's a war veteran, and then when they are found, then they have to figure out what they want to do with the rest of their lives. It's a beautiful film. Leave No Trace. See that.
Fantastic. I want to look for that one. How about you, Paul? Tell me something good.
Excited about the Singles Only podcast we dropped today with you and I interviewing Joe Quazzella. It was hilarious. Please catch that on paulfcomedy.com.
One of the funniest stories. One of the funniest dating stories I've ever heard.
I got to listen to this. Yeah. I got to listen.
Of all time.
Excited to go to House of Comedy in Minneapolis this week, starting on Wednesday. If you guys are Minneapolis or know people. Yeah, it's at the Mall of America. I'll be there all week. And more importantly, I'm excited that I beat Tom Hush at a bet about the movie's length, which makes me feel good.
I don't know that that really happened.
It's hurtful. It's hurtful.
It does sound a little bit.
Well, just because
specific.
He's a big Tom Brady fan in the Patriots, and really don't like the Patriots.
Let's not even do this.
That is a problem.
Not here. Not now.
Don't make that happen right now. How about you, Tom Hush? What's your something good?
My something good is that I just released the first podcast of 2019 for NoCo Cinema. We're back for a new year of Chicago Film Talk, and really excited. Talked with the great Amy Guth, the executive director of the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Talked about some film resolutions and all that kind of stuff. So really glad to be back in the swing of that.
I was looking at some film festivals because I've gone to the Social Change Film Festival. Our good friend Todd Belcour is the executive director and has these film festivals, and it's really the only one I've ever been to. And when it was unbelievable. I mean, some of these films are transformative.
Yes.
There were a lot of documentaries about how, you know, these stories that you really don't know anything about, whether it's how they try to get water to farms manually in Mexico, or about there was an orphanage here in the Chicagoland area, and there are still some people who grew up there that are still that's still their family. Just wonderful.
I love those vignettes about life that you haven't even thought about, and there's just so much of that out there.
I was thinking, and then the reason I thought about it again, I was Paul, do you have any, are you familiar with the Edinburgh Fringe Festival?
I am, only through you, because you brought it up to me.
So I was trying to figure out, because my family wants to go to Scotland. We were all kind of talking about that a little bit earlier, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could get into this? So you basically pay for yourself. You pay to perform there. You have to get your own venue and everything. So I'm thinking about maybe trying that. And when I was Googling it, I found the Edinburgh Film Festival.
I
mistakenly almost started registering. I'm like, wait a minute, I don't have a film. I'm just a comic. More after this on 720 WGN.